Helen Frankenthaler, the pioneer in color field painting and lyrical expressionism in the mid-1900s, loved old master paintings, particularly Peter Paul Rubens's Energy. She said she experienced a thrilling feeling in looking at his works, and she believed that the best art should touch someone initially and instinctively. This is Erin Jones, director of the Museum and Gallery of Bob Jones University, with M&G's podcast, Art Break. Not everyone responds to a work of art the same way. Some people never really understand why art is interesting or engaging. On the other hand, some of us have been so arrested by a work that we were forced to stop, look, and contemplate. Listen to some individuals with memorable art experiences. Experiences that may help you understand the power and impact of visual messages.
Hi, I'm Liz Rundorf-Smith, and I am currently serving as program director at Greenville Center for Creative Arts. I've been with GCCA since 2016. As program director, I organize all of our educational programming, our classes and workshops with artists, and in the past year, also our virtual programming. I came to Greenville in 2006 to work for the Artisphere Festival. At the time, there had been one Artisphere Festival, so I was with Artisphere as the program director until July of 2016. So really in that first decade of forming the festival, I got to see it grow. I am originally from Western Pennsylvania, and so in talking about my most memorable art experience, I thought about a day I spent at the Butler Institute of American Art in Youngstown, Ohio. The Butler was about 15 minutes from the small town in Pennsylvania, Sharon, Pennsylvania, where I grew up. And I was at the Butler on this day. I was about 3 or 4 years old, and I was with my mom and my grandmother. And we walked into one of the rooms at the Butler, and I just remember seeing a painting that I actually went back and looked up on the Butler website yesterday because I wanted to be able to speak about the details of the painting. So this painting is by American Impressionist Robert Vano, and the title is In Flanders Field. The painting is 59 by 104 inches, and it was painted in 1890. And it's a large landscape painting featuring a woman gathering flowers in a field of poppies, and there are two children in the scene playing in the background. What I remember about this painting was the texture and the energy of the brushstroke, because at 3 years old, I walked up to the painting and ran my hands over it. And my memory that has stayed with me to this day is the memory of a voice coming over a loudspeaker to say, "Don't touch the painting." I think at 3 years old, it was probably the most frightened I'd ever been. And I remember crying uncontrollably and my mom consoling me and saying, "I want to go home now." And I think that at that moment, it was instilled in my being that art was something much bigger than me. And that experience made me always feel a sense of awe in walking into a gallery. I went back to the Butler as a teenager, and I remember seeing the painting again. And there was a red velvet rope in front of it. So I was probably not the only child to want to reach out and touch the textured oil painting in that large landscape. But it also, in my mind, I think, marked the moment that I felt like I needed to find a connection to whatever that really big thing was. And so sitting here today, a much older woman, I have never forgotten that painting and that time in the Butler.
Hi, my name is Barb Sicko, and I was the registrar at the Museum and Gallery at Bob Jones University for almost 20 years. When I started this job, I didn't even know what a registrar did, but I learned on the job and now know some of what is involved. I'd like to share some of what was going on in my duties as registrar. I learned so much about our wonderful collection, met so many lovely people, and got to travel to quite a few interesting places, mostly in Europe. Part of the registrar's duty is to know the collection, its condition, and location. Since we have over 400 paintings, it was an ongoing learning experience. One part of that task involves seeing that the paintings are carefully packed so that they can travel safely to other museums when they are loaned. My first experience as a courier was on a trip to Turin just prior to the 2006 Olympics. I had never traveled out of the United States. In fact, I didn't even possess a passport. And I certainly didn't speak a word of Italian. But after many months of emails back and forth to Italy, I was ready. After my coworkers and I carefully placed the paintings in a specially crafted crate, I climbed in the back of a box truck for the trip to New York City. Because of the size of the crate, we needed to fly in a cargo plane, and in 2006, that meant flying out of New York. The next morning, a nice gentleman, Captain Z, met me at the cargo area to help me with all the paperwork and logistics involved in sending a large crating piece of fine art to Italy. He treated me to a nice breakfast, and I had some time to kill before wheels up at 11 p.m. Riding in a cargo plane is pretty interesting. I was the only passenger in this huge plane with two nice Italian pilots. We had boxes full of lovely sandwiches, fruits, and sweets to enjoy for our trip over the Atlantic. They invited me to sit in the cockpit for the takeoff and landing, and I got to see the Brooklyn Bridge and all the lights of New York before it got very dark and we were out over the ocean. I was able to sleep for several hours, and when I woke up, the sun was shining very brightly, and we were over the Alps and Mont Blanc. One of the pilots told me he would make me breakfast. Now, there were just these two pilots and me in this huge cargo plane, but there was a lot of hot food available, and he asked me if I would like a cappuccino and said he would make it better than Starbucks. We landed in Milan, and it was snowing so heavily that we could not even get off the plane for several hours. And then I ended up in an Italian cargo area, cold concrete floor, with no food and no phone, and a lot of people speaking Italian as fast as they could. After spending several hours again in this cargo area, going through customs, we placed the crate in a truck and started up the snow-covered winding mountain roads from Milan to Turin. We saw signs along the way for various Olympic venues. Once we reached Torino, the crate had to rest in the museum for 20 hours for its acclimatizing process, and the next day was my rest day. I walked for 8 hours looking at all the sights of the beautiful city, many of which I would see again on the TV coverage of the Winter Games, and I could say I stood on that very street corner. The next day we unpacked the crate and many well-trained hands placed it on the wall with a number of other paintings from all over the world. The people there were so kind and told me all about the best places to buy the wonderful Italian chocolate candy and authentic Nutella. And then I made the trip back to Milan by truck and home again to New York City in a normal plane. Another trip I had was to Stuttgart, Germany. There were many emails back and forth to organizers there, many hours of work, but my contact there spoke good English and was extremely helpful. As a normal part of the process, my coworkers and I placed the painting in its cocoon of Dartek and then into the sturdy work crate we had had built. This time I boarded a truck in our parking lot to make the trip to Atlanta. We could now travel from Atlanta to the continent, and this painting was not so large that a cargo plane was necessary. We spent just over an hour in the Delta cargo area, mostly watching from behind the yellow lines as the workers palletized the painting and secured it for its trip to Germany. My colleague from Masterpiece, Leia, took me for a quick lunch as we waited for the departure time. While we were there, Leia took a phone call and got this horrible look on her face. We had to go back to the cargo area because my crate had fallen about 12 inches off the transporter on its way to the tarmac. There was someone there from Masterpiece watching over it, since I couldn't be. I was just sick since we only had about an hour before we were due to take off, and I couldn't open the crate there in the airport. So, well, they had to load the crate onto the plane and get us started on the overnight trip to Germany. Since the crate had to acclimatize for 24 hours before we could open it, it was placed in the vault until the next morning. While we were there, there were 12 people standing around that crate as we opened it, and it was fine. God had been good, and our safe packing was rewarded. One more special trip was with a small painting by a student of Rembrandt. This only required a regular plane. Here I was in Paris. I walked many miles while there and also took a lovely bus trip around the city. The best part of this experience was not having to wait in the long lines at the Louvre to get in. My credentials let me bypass that line. Our painting, The Head of Christ, was not glazed, did not have any glass on it, and all the others did. They asked permission to place that glass, and I got to watch the process in the workroom of the Louvre. So many things could have gone wrong. God was so good and kept me and the painting safe. I always had a place to sleep and food to eat and so many wonderful memories.
Hello, my name is David Ferris, and I'm an interior designer at Villa Verona Design. One of the things that made me get into interior design was that I love art, I love history, and I love our culture that explains where we are right now and where we came from. So when I was choosing to go to school, I really wanted to find a place that would encourage me to study history and enjoy our Western culture. In my first art class, Mrs. Radford wanted to make us think biblically about being artists, but she also wanted to educate us about different art mediums and different artists. And she was interested in showing us contemporary artists, but also the old masters. And in seeing the old masters, I just had a really special connection with them. Because even though they are very old and they're from a different era and a different time, when you see the paintings, you see people that have lived lives before us. And sometimes you see believers that have done difficult things, but God was with them through the whole time. And it's really amazing to see their work. One of the special art moments that I want to share today is Mrs. Radford showed us a slide of the Madame de Cassonville by Ingres. And I was personally just stunned by this painting. When you see the Madame de Cassonville, she's in a gorgeous silk gown in front of a mirror. And there's so much detail. To me, the folds in the silk and the texture that you can see is fascinating. I love textiles, and to be able to see the textile communicated in a flat medium is really stunning. But also, there's an individual that you're seeing, and that's so amazing. She really looks out at the viewer, and she's questioning. Her arms are pulled close around her, and she's really thinking about something. One of my favorite objects is the gilt and cobalt jardinières that are behind her. They're filled with flowers, and they're reflecting in this mirror that Ingres put behind his painting. And it's really stunning because you can see the back of her head and all this detail. And it makes you wonder, like, there was so much thought and skill that went into painting a painting and then also thinking about what's behind the sitter and how it's going to look from a different angle. One of the interesting things about this painting is Ang just paints his signature on the side of the wall. And it's very simple, but it's still there. And it's very fascinating. Now, one of the most wonderful experiences I had was on a trip to New York, I was actually able to go to the Frick Collection and see this painting in person. It was stunning. Now, when you're in the Frick Collection, it's in this small hallway. And the walls are painted with faux sandstone. and it's a very intimate space. And this is a large painting, and it's full with these gorgeous blue cobalt colors. And it has a beautiful gilt mirror over top of a French gilt console, and it's really stunning. And to be in that space and be able to just observe and see just the whole beauty, it just really, you just have to pause and wonder because it's so special. One of the interesting things at the Frick is that they actually have some of the decorative objects that were used in the painting. And I think that's just very special to see that, you know, the things people had are still being preserved. Because a lot of times we think of, you know, paintings are fine art, but, you know, some of the household objects that we have are not, or furniture or antiques are not, you know, they're not art. But when you think about them, they really are. And as an interior designer, it's the little things that are designed well and that are beautiful that really can enhance life. And I think this goes back to the fact that we're all creators. We're called to be like Christ. God was the first creator, and we're supposed to emulate that. So when we make little small things that are beautiful and that bring a smile to someone's face, we're taking part in that beautiful creation that God wants us to do. And someday in heaven, we'll still be creating beautiful things, and God will be teaching us how to be better artists. And that's one of my most memorable times with art.
Hi, I'm Lauren Hughes. I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I'm a community facilitator. And I love art and really love creativity and seeing it develop in other people, see it developed from other people, and often try to develop it more keenly within myself. But when I was thinking about the first real impression where art just took my breath away, I was in St. Peter Square in Rome, and I think I had seen a picture of this space, but to experience it and be in that giant space, it was just overwhelming. It was my first visit to Italy, and just the architecture and the size and the plan and the design and the sculpture and the mosaic work, and with all that going on, with all the people there, it was so serene and so beautiful, and it just literally took my breath away. And I just felt so fortunate to be able to see something so beautiful in person. And since that interest in art has been developed over the years through travel and through different city museums, both domestically and internationally, and we had the fortune of living in Florence, Italy, so then it really seeped in because we got to see art every day, everywhere we turned. And I'll have to say, not just from my experience of living there, but I think my favorite painting is the Da Vinci Adoration of the Magi. Love it because it's unfinished, and you get to see the work of the artist. You get to see his thoughts. You get to see where he made changes. It made me understand that me as an artist, and I'm not even an artist, I didn't describe myself that way, that I can make changes, and it gets even better. And that is one of my favorite paintings. They just actually refurbished it, and just the lightness of the unfinished drawings and the charcoal is just amazing. So really love that painting. And I was also thinking, too, I've been amazed that we have the paintings that we have in Greenville. That's why I love our museum here at the Museum and Gallery. And through my travels, some of my favorite experiences are up in Durham, North Carolina. I had children up there in school and went to the National Museum up there and decided to go see the exhibits, see what was happening. And there are a bunch of Carlo Dolci paintings from the Museum and Gallery up in Durham in this museum. And I was just so thrilled to be able to see not only my connection to Greenville, but to recognize the paintings and recognize their worth and seeing that other people see it. And had the same experience in Paris at the Luxembourg Museum. They had a show of On Tintoretti, and it was packed with Parisians. And that was very cool to see. And we got to file down into where we saw the painting that the museum had loaned there. And it was just such a fun experience to tell the French people with no French, by the way, who we were and where we were from and how excited we were to be able to feel like we were a part of that painting in Paris, France. And because I have been so fortunate to travel and see a lot and learn about the social and political culture behind art, it's given me such a huge appreciation. It makes me really passionate to encourage others to learn more about art and take advantage of museums and discover more, understand there's an artist in each of us and, you know, try to nurture that. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And, I don't feel like I'll be a painter or a sculptor or anything as my primary thing. I think my primary job going forward is still going to be a wife and a mother and a grandmother. But just last week, I was with my 4-year-old granddaughter, and we kept talking about going to the museum. I was dying to go to the museum out in Texas, and ended up couldn't go because her sister got sick. But after I left, she was telling her mother she really wants to go see the museum with Nona. And so just cultivating it early in our children and letting them see their excitement and grow their imagination, I think is really important.
I'm Stephen Jones, former president of Bob Jones University and grandson of the founder of Bob Jones Museum and Gallery. The experience I had where art first came alive for me occurred when I was a teen, a sophomore in high school, and my grandfather took my brother and me on a trip to Europe and the Holy Land. We started in Europe, and I quickly realized that the path he had chosen, the destinations that we would stay at, were not really organized for our interest, but for the great museums in each of the cities. And so we dutifully accompanied my grandfather, though I think as high schoolers, we missed most of what we were supposed to be getting. But after 5 to 8 museums in major cities in Europe, we were driving through a relatively small town, and he said, "I want to show you the best picture in the world." Now that actually got my interest because he had certainly been exposed to the best art that exists in the world. And for him to say that we were going to stop and see what he estimated to be the best one really perked me up. So we arrived and we drove through a pretty industrial part of the town, arrived where he said it was, and found not a museum, but a church. And then to make matters worse, the doors were shut because they were in the middle of a mass at the cathedral. So he said, "Let's wait." And again, that was unusual for Grandpa, so I knew this has to be important. So we waited for the mass to be dismissed, and then we made our way into the church. As soon as we were inside, we stepped over and realized that there was a chapel to the right where a lot of people were gathered. So we went into the chapel, standing at the back of it, and in the distance, at the other end of the room, there was an altarpiece. It's about 11 feet tall and 15 feet long. And we couldn't see much of it, just the exterior and far details because of the crowd. But as people saw it and left, we moved forward. And the closer we got, the more vivid it became. Obviously, the size was important, but the details were just spectacular. My grandfather said, "What do you guys see and what do you notice? Look at the people." So we looked at the people in the painting, and there were men, there were women. We realized very quickly from their dress that they were ancient and current in the 1400s when the painting was painted. And they came from all nations, every era, sinners and saints, prophets, apostles, martyrs, clergy, everybody from the four corners of the earth coming to see something at the center. That it took us a while to get close enough to see what that was. And then standing in the center of the painting, on an altar, was the Lamb of God. And Grandpa said again, "What do you notice?" We noticed he was standing. We noticed he was victorious. But we also noticed that from his chest flowed a stream of blood into a golden chalice. And that is the moment that art came alive for me for the first time. It was painted in the 1400s, finished in 1432 by the Van Eck brothers. But it was really looking at Revelation 5 and the scene that's depicted there, where John is told to expect something great in heaven. The one who is able to claim everything as being his own. And at first, no one steps forward. And then he's told by a being in heaven not to weep over the absence, but to look at the throne. And there in the midst of the scene, what stood, a lamb, as it had been slain, Scripture says, which means slaughtered. So a slaughtered lamb, but not bleeding out in weakness, standing in the throne of God, the Lord Jesus Christ. And that painting in Ghent, The Adoration of the Lamb by title, pictured that moment when people of every tongue and tribe and nation and language come together to worship Christ who rules over all.
Hello, my name is Vivian Morris. I'm a graduate of Bob Jones University with a Bachelor of Arts in Studio Art. I currently work out of my studio in Greenville making woodcut prints of imaginary creatures and real-life flowers. My first eye-opening experience with art was when I was just a child watching VHS recordings of cartoons like Looney Tunes. With VHS players, you could pause the screen and then like press the pause button several times, and it would just move the recording along just little by little. Then I would stop it once I found the perfect expression of a character that I liked. I would take a piece of printer paper and hold it up to the screen and trace the character. That was really my first study of facial and body expressions. Then as I got a little older and DVDs became popular, I would love watching the bonus features that showed how the movie was made. And that was how I discovered that art careers exist. You could actually get paid to make art. But the most impactful experience so far in my life was learning woodcut printmaking at Bob Jones University. In my junior year of college at BJU, my professor taught us the process of making a woodcut print, and then we were assigned to create one ourselves. Creating that print was the first time I really felt inspired by an art medium and its process. The process goes like this. You take a slab of wood, either a softwood or MDF, and sketch directly on the surface of the wood to prepare for the next step, which is carving. Then you take carving tools called gouges and gouge out the areas from the surface of the wood that don't belong. The parts of the woodblock that are left untouched become the image that you will transfer to paper, like a stamp. Ink is then applied to the woodblock and printed to paper. That's just a simple explanation of the process. It can get much more complicated than that. It was the carving that I fell in love with first. As Michelangelo, the famous Italian painter and sculptor, once said, "I saw the angel in the marble and carved until I set him free." That's how I feel when carving wood. It's like I'm just carving away the pieces of wood that don't belong to set my creatures or flowers free. Learning about other artists in art history who used woodcut printmaking too was very inspiring. For example, M.C. Escher is a Dutch artist who lived from 1898 to 1972, who created many intricate, imaginative, and surreal designs using woodcut printing. Escher is known for his bizarre optical illusions and conceptual art. One of my personal favorites of his is called Tetrahedral Planetoid. It's got two squares. The outer square is pitch black, and then there's another square floating in the middle of that square, but turned on one of its points, so it's like a diamond. And in that square, he made a city. It radiates from the center of the square out to its points. And it has buildings, little trees, a river running through it with little boats and tiny people fishing and rowing in the boats, and also people walking around the city. The piece is only about 16 by 16 inches, and he crams so many tiny details in there. The imagination and amount of detail put into this, and really all of his pieces, is just incredible. Last year, during the toughest, least inspiring year of my life, the Lord sent a huge blessing my way. I was contacted by the Columbia Museum of Art in Columbia, South Carolina, to hang one of my woodcut prints there, alongside several very talented printmaking artists. The show is hanging in conjunction with the largest private collection of M.C. Escher works on exhibition in the world. The exhibit is called The Imaginative Worlds of M.C. Escher, and it runs until June 6th of this year. I am really just so honored to be hanging right next to
such a legend as M.C. Escher. So these are just a few examples of how my appreciation of art has grown, and I'm looking forward to experiencing many more.
My name is Christopher Zeidowitz, and I teach film. One of the things that really stands out to me with art is the ability to communicate visually. Like I said, I teach film, and so images really do tell stories. And what has always appealed to me is the collection that the museum and gallery has of Benjamin West. Once you learn the story of who Benjamin West was and what he tried to accomplish with King George, you have a greater appreciation. You can never look at those paintings or the space that they occupy in the same way. Picture it. Hundreds of years ago, Benjamin West learned how to paint in the United States. He had a natural talent, and being sent over into Europe to learn and to refine his talent, he ended up in England, and his talent was appreciated by others. And he rose very quickly and even became part of court painters and befriending the court. He quickly became friends with King George. And now King George loved art and loved this friendship with West. And West and George came up with this idea to put together a large collection of religious art, revealed religion, to show how God works. And from the beginning all the way through, and each painting would represent part of the story of the Bible. Benjamin West naturally loved painting huge paintings. He loved the drama of big paintings. And so to be able to get a commission and to work directly with King George III was a dream come true. But remember, he's an American. An American in the court of England during a tumultuous time in England. And so Benjamin West begins his commissions. He would paint and sketch smaller paintings, sketch out what the ideas were. The king would have to present some of those ideas to get approval from others because they wanted to create a chapel. And this chapel would be around 55 by 90 feet in length and would show the entire gospel of really revealed religion. So they start this quest. And so he starts to paint and he starts to tell the story little by little. And King George would have him paint larger. And so over time, out of about 35 paintings or so, 12, 13 are painted and large scale. But the chapel is not ready. And the chapel is not really moving forward. The king starts to deteriorate. And the friendship between George and Benjamin West starts to wane. Benjamin is cut off from the king. And he can't really continue forward with that chapel, this Protestant chapel of religious art. And so, eventually, Benjamin West is cut off from the king, not to see him again. The king dies, and Benjamin West dies shortly after. His best friend and this commission is put to rest. In fact, the family of King George III gives the paintings back to the West family. The West family does not know what to do with all of these large paintings. They try and hold exhibitions and different things in their own homes. They try to give it to the United States to start an art gallery, but the United States doesn't want it. And so the paintings disappear into time until Dr. Bob Jr. buys these paintings. He finds a collection of them, brings them to the United States, and puts them in a building about 90 feet by about 50-ish feet, almost the exact same size. And I've always been amazed looking at these paintings, the stories that are being told from these paintings communicating that this building is almost the same size and they're being housed in a Protestant chapel in South Carolina. What a beautiful story to know that King George and Benjamin West's visual gospel story remains to this day in a Protestant chapel in one of the first states to rebel. And it's been here all 60, 70, 80 years and is just phenomenal to see. To be in there in that location to see it is beautiful. It changes the way you see those paintings. Thank you, Mr. West and King George III.
Supposedly, 18th century painter Benjamin West was ill after seeing some of the great works of art for the first time in Rome. In fact, scientists recently confirmed the reality of individuals being overcome by the beauty of art and architecture that they respond physically. It's called Stendhal syndrome, named after a tourist from the early 1800s, a man who was emotionally and physically affected by the aesthetic beauty of the Santa Croce Cathedral in Florence. He thought it was a nervous breakdown or heart attack. Perhaps that seems extreme to you, yet whether it is art's texture, setting, or preservation, one can be overwhelmed with awe and humbled in the presence of incredible talent and beauty of purpose and message, particularly if it has endured the journey of generations. If you would like to know more about the museum and gallery and its internationally respected collection of European old masters, visit bjumg.org.